We're coming to lesson 7, and this is our last study of 1 Samuel. So what do you say in the last study? Well, we're going to try, because I really believe that you learn things by repetition. And we need to learn the flow of what's happening when you get to 1 Samuel. You've come to the period, to near the end of the period of the judges. And the Bible says in those last verses of the book of Judges, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. There was no continuity of understanding of the will of God, because Israel had not come in there and learned the scriptures like they should have. And so it's everybody on their own sort of decided what they were doing. And so you've got that kind of situation. But everything is ready to change. And if you know the very nature of the Bible, let's look at it. We intend to spend quite a few minutes tonight just looking at what we've looked at for the last 2.5 months, I guess, in this study. First of all, thank you, Kirk. I don't think Kirk's here tonight, but I want to thank him for teaching the class last week while I was out of town. When we look at this, let's go back and look at it consecutively. Where's the book begin? If I say Hannah, does that ring a bell? Other than the fact you can be dyslexic and spell it frontwards and backwards and you'll make an A+, okay? If you just get the letters in your mind, whether you're dyslexic or not, one of those few words in the Bible that's the same frontwards and backwards. Who is she? She's the mother of Samuel. Now, who's Samuel? Samuel is the transitional character. From the time they got in the promised land, they've had the judges, and the last of the judges is Samuel. It's going to come to an end in the book of 1 Samuel. There's a reason for that, and we'll talk a little bit about that in just a few minutes. But what you have is, You have this transitional period, because the Lord never really intended for them to have strong central government. You remember how the priests were there? They were scattered throughout the land. You know, all of the tribes had land given to them except the Levites. And the Levites did not have all of this land given to them. They were scattered all over the place. And it had been God's will that the priest teach the people the Word of God. Now, that doesn't alleviate parents and remove from parents the responsibilities. I'm not trying to minimize that, but that was his design. And he said, I'll take care of you. Be faithful to me. And armies, the nations around you, will not even attack you. And if they do, they're going to be defeated if you'll be faithful to me. But that's not what happened. During the period of the judges, they lost land and territory to those nations that were around them, and the period of the judges lasted nearly 400 years. And so now we come to that time when the people said, if we're going to survive, we're going to have a strong central government, and the way to have a strong central government is to have a king. In one of the minor prophets, God said, I gave them a king in my anger. Ever have a stubborn kid? Who hasn't? You know, you understand what I'm talking about? And that's what they were. They were God's children. They didn't want to know what God wanted to do. They no sooner did Joshua and his generation die, they turned to idolatry. And so during the period of Judges, you've got 400 years of them people of the Jewish nation. Most of the time, if not almost the entirety of the time, most of the time worshiping idols. And finally, like stubborn kids, they've just said, I want it, I want it, I want it. And the Lord said, I am going to give you the very thing that you want. So the book of 1 Samuel begins with telling us where Samuel comes from. Now you've got Hannah, and you've got Eli. And all of that is in the first four chapters. It's Samuel's been born. You remember she prayed that she might have a son. And she promised God, if you'll give me a son, I'll give him to you all the days of your life. Those who have young children or may someday have young children. What a way to look at what God's given to you. I have this son. I've had this daughter. This son or this daughter is a gift from God, and I'm going to do everything I can to give them back to God. That's sort of God's plan. That's not the way it worked out. Sometimes that's not the way it works. It works out in the life because our own children sometimes have those kinds of attitude. But Samuel's sons are no good. Wonder why? Samuel was raised by Eli. How old is Eli? He's anciently old. You know, Samuel was taken to Eli, who was the next to last judge, down there at the tabernacle. And Hannah brought that little boy and said, I prayed for this. I'm going to give this child back to God. And Eli, I want him to serve you here, work with you and serve with you inside this tabernacle. Eli agreed. But sometimes grandparents don't know how to raise children either. Isn't that amazing? Sometimes grandparents, don't really understand what their responsibility is. And yet think about Timothy and his mother Eunice and his grandmother Lois. And Paul writes that and he said, the faith that was in your grandmother was in your mother and it is in you also. Yeah, that was good. But that's Eli's sons were evil. And that turns right around. And Samuel's sons are evil. You've got a situation where Samuel and his sons, because they're so evil, the Philistines come and take the Ark of the Covenant. And all of that is in 1 Samuel. During this battle, Eli's sons, those priests that were evil and immoral and ungodly men, they're killed. And Eli is awaiting the news of the battle, and they came and they've told him, your sons were killed. Hophni and Phinehas were killed. Got to understand that. And that break the heart of any parent loses, those two sons. But then they said, and the Ark of the Covenant has been taken by the Philistines. I don't know if you understand the importance of that Ark of the Covenant. You know what was inside that Ark? 10 Commandments. Where'd they come from? The finger of God wrote these very words that were on those tablets of stone. And now, it's the only Bible they've got. Isn't that amazing? I mean, you stop and think this. I mean, the book of Judges may have been written by this time, but you got what Moses wrote. Now, you got the 10 Commandments, but Moses wrote Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy. And where was that kept? Those scrolls were kept right outside the Ark of the Covenant. Now, they've lost the Ark of the Covenant, but they've lost the 10 Commandments. What are you going to tell God? You gave us these great, marvelous, wonder commands. We don't have them anymore. Now, there was something else. There were two other things in the Ark of the Covenant. There was a pot of manna inside the Ark of the Covenant. And Aaron's rod, just the walking cane, budded and made... became like a tree just immediately. And that was to say Aaron and his sons were to be the high priest, and that's the evidence of it. You've lost the evidence that the Levites and the house of Aaron are the priest. You've lost it all, and the Philistines got it. And when Eli hears that, he falls over and breaks his neck. Now, the people come to Samuel as when he is gets older in years. Samuel lives almost two-thirds of the book of 1 Samuel. But Samuel, he's old and his sons are evil. And so when you get in chapters, 7 through 11, the people say to Samuel, "We don't want your sons." It's amazing. God raised up the judges. Samuel appointed his sons to be judges. There's a difference there. God, when he appointed judges, there were some good judges that were not so good, but there were some really great judges. What about Gideon? God called Gideon specifically, sent an angel to call him. And so Samuel says, "I'm going to appoint my sons, to be the next judges," and they were corrupt and vile. And so they said, "We want to be like the kings, like the nations that are around us. We want to have a king." And it's important to get the picture, the flow of the Bible. You need to know the story of the Bible. The story of the Bible is about creation and about the flood that shows God's definition of sin and God's judgment against sin. You've got Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and a great Jewish nation is about to come. And when you get to the book of Exodus, they're a great nation. God's kept his word. But by the time you get to Exodus, 2,500 years have passed. And so now you've got this flow of this nation coming into that promised land, and they're ruled by judges. But those judges failed. Some of them failed, but the people said, "We don't want what God's given us. We've looked out here, and the immoral, ungodly, Gentile, pagan world knows more about a godly kingdom than the God of heaven. Had his original plan been followed and the Levites were scattered all over to teach the word of God, had that continued along, God would have still protected them. They would not have even needed an army. But they're ungodly and they're losing their land, so they said, "We got to have a leader." And so God gives them what they asked for, and that is King Saul. And King Saul had some amazing victories. There's one paragraph there as you get over to chapter 12 through, I think, chapter 15. You get over, and Saul is magnificent in his battles. Except there's one battle he doesn't do so good in, and that's when Goliath shows up. Goliath, you remember the story about David and Goliath? Yeah. Where's David? He's a shepherd. Where's his brothers? Oh, they're in the army. They're in the army. And so David carries some food from his father Jesse, carries that food up there to his brothers. And he gets up there, and this Goliath comes out and challenges the God of heaven by challenging the Jewish nation. And they cower in fear. They wanted a king who would lead them in battle. And he's tall. He's not as tall as Goliath, but he's taller than any Jew, any Jewish man. He should have been the one out there. I mean, you've just read about him having all these great victories because, early in his life, he was doing real well. But he doesn't fight Goliath. That's pretty amazing. And so here's Shepherd David, and when he gets up there, he sees Goliath coming out, baby in the family. You know how special babies in the family are? They're the most mistreated members of every family. You understand that? If you're a baby in the family, you understand that your older brothers and sisters get to do things you're not allowed to do, and you have an earlier bedtime than they. It's so hard being, and brothers and big brothers and sisters can be so mean to you. So David gets up there, and here this giant comes out. And David said, "What's going on here? This man's blaspheming God. I'll go fight him." You know what his brothers say? "Shh. David, shut up. You see how big that guy is? He's got this long sword. Now, we know the rest of the story. David took that long sword that Goliath had and chopped his head off, chopped Goliath's head off. Well, King Saul, he's finally got somebody that'll go out in the battle, so what does he do? He calls David in and tries to put his armor on David. He's got the wrong size. You know, you think about what size tennis shoe do you wear, you know, size 9 or 10 or something like that. But how would you like to have LeBron James size 16 shoes to play to play basketball in? You understand what I'm talking about? And so Saul tries to put his armor on, and I'm not sure if it's a coat of mail or, you know, that type of thing. How much would that have weighed? You know, Saul's big enough to carry quite a bit of it. But here's David. He said, I don't want that. It doesn't fit. And so he goes out there, and he faces down Goliath, and he says, I'm coming to you. You've come with the sword and the shield, but I'm coming to you in the name of the Lord. And David takes that sling and throws that rock, and it hits Goliath right up there. And Goliath falls down, and David kills him. Saul said, whoa, who is this young man? Who's this young man? And it's not long before he's got David inside the palace, whatever kind of place he had. David is there inside the house. And so then he appoints David to be head of his army. Why? David's really good at this warfare business. And so he's going out, and Saul's kingdom is flourishing. You've got to understand, everything's going great for King Saul. Goliath's no more. The Philistines aren't bothering us. And David is my general, and he's out here, and we're really doing well. And so the people start singing a song. Two verses. Saul has killed his thousands. Oh, how good that feels. King Saul, sing that verse again and again. I just love that song. I really, really love that song. Saul has killed his thousands. Verse 2, David's killed his 10,000s. And so what you have here, is Saul beginning to chase David all over the place. And so look at that that bottom slide there. David flees. Well, we'll put the bottom slide up just a minute. Put the other one up. I'm going to read those words there. David flees from Saul. Saul's doing everything he kills him, everything he can. And he goes to Ramah, to Nob, to Gath, to the tabernacle, to Keilah, to Engedi, to another cave, to Paran, to the Philistines, to Gath, to Jezreel, to the Philistines. Go ahead and put that last slide up there. And here's somebody on the right side of the screen up there, somebody trying to show where all David went. You know, he's all over the place. Why? Saul's trying to kill him. If you're going to try to kill this little David, how many soldiers do you take? How big's a posse? Is that a good way to say it? You know, Billy the Kid or some one of these guys from American history. The sheriff says, okay, let's get a posse and let's go out and get him. Well, if you've got 8 or 10, you're going to capture just anybody if you know where there is. And these people are telling Saul, here's where he is. He has messages come to Saul, but he's not just sending 8 or 10. He's not sending a posse of 50. He sends an army, not the fullness of the hundreds of thousands of soldiers, but he sends and a group. I believe the number that is in the text, I could be wrong about this, 4,000 soldiers against David. And I love that slide. If I'd had time, but it would have taken a whole lot more time than I think the the devoting of that time is not worth the time it would take to find a map and put all of these places on it where David went. But it would be interesting. Now, the problem is in doing that, you don't have good enough maps to find all those places. And so, but it is amazing. But see all those arrows and everything? That's 10 chapters. And it's just Saul one time after another after another. And Saul is doing all of these things to kill David. David has two chances to kill Saul. He has two chances to kill Saul. Saul comes into a cave where David is hiding. He didn't come to the cave to look for David. He doesn't even think David's anywhere around. David and his men are in the back part of the cave, and his soldier said, "Kill him." And David said, "I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it." And then there's another occasion where David goes over to where Saul is asleep and takes some of the possessions that were Saul's and takes it away from King Saul and then holds it up and said, and Saul said, "You're a better man than I am." He is. 10,000 versus 1,000. Second verse. And jealousy will make you do things you wouldn't imagine you were doing. I don't know what your high school sweetheart romance was like. Yeah. And you may not have been the person who did this. You may not have been the one. You may have been the victim or something like this. But somebody gets jealous of you. Have anybody behind your back just to run you down, seek to destroy you? Nobody in the Bible, as far as I'm able to determine, suffered any more than David did. Now, Jesus, I'm not minimizing Jesus, but this is the life of David. From the time he killed Goliath, from the time they started singing the song, for the next whole 10 or 12 chapters, he's running away from Saul. And there's just one event after another after another. And if you want to read this and study this and find out what David was really like, then read these last 10 or 12 chapters of 1 Samuel. And you'll see how David responds over and over and over again. But then you get to the last chapter. And when you get to the last chapter, That's what I want us to look at. It tells you of what happened. What happened to Saul? And so go to the end of 1 Samuel. May need to open your Bible so that we can look at it together. Starting in chapter 30, verse 1, tells of the location as to where David was, and the Amalekites are there, and they're coming and fighting, and had taken captive the women and those who were there from small to great. They did not kill anyone, carried them away, and went their way. So David and his men came to the city, and it was burned, but all of the women and the children, the sons and their daughters had been taken away. David and the people who were with him lifted up their voice and wept until there was no more power. David's two wives had been taken captive. David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, because they've lost their wives, and they've lost their mothers, and they've lost their sons, and they lost their daughters. David strengthened himself, and he says, "Bring the ephod to me." And David said, "Should I pursue these people?" The ephod was the garment worn by the high priest. And it had two stones in it called the Urim and the Thummim. And in some way, they could inquire of God and sometimes God would answer. How he did that, we're not sure. The rabbis said, rabbis, not the Bible, but the very fact they say it, maybe is a semblance of truth to it, that one of those stones could mean yes and the other could be no. And that they could inquire of God about should you do this or not do this. It's this ephod that the priest wore. And that stone in some way could be used and get an answer from God. Sometimes God wouldn't answer. You read that, and so whenever you read, they inquire of the Lord. They're talking about these two stones called the Urim and the Thummim. Shall I pursue the troops? Shall I overtake them? And so here is Abiathar, the priest, and he answered and said, pursue, for you shall surely overtake them, and without fail, you will rescue every one of them. David and his 600 men who were with him, verse 10, David pursued, he and 400 men, 200 stayed behind. It was so weird they could not cross the brook. They found an Egyptian in the field. They brought him to David, gave him bread. They gave him a piece of cake, figs, for he hadn't had anything to eat. David said to him, to whom do you belong? He said, I'm a young man. I'm from the Amalekites. And my master left me here because 3 days ago I was sick. We made an invasion and we've burned Ziklag, the last words in verse 14. David said, can you tell me where that troop is? They brought him down there and they spread out over the land. They were eating and drinking and dancing. David attacked them from twilight until evening the next day. Not a man of them escaped. Not a single one. Except 400 young men who rode on camels and fled. So David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken away, got his two wives, got all the wives and mothers and the children, and brought them all back. There was nothing lacking, either small and the great. David took all the flocks and herds they had driven before those of other livestock. They said, this is David. David came, and here's a point. We probably don't have time to mention it. When we came back, they were ready to divide the spoils. The 400 men that went to fight said, we'll divide it 400 ways. And David said, no, we'll. Those who stayed here and took care of the baggage, they're just as much a part of this battle as others. There's a spiritual point here. You got to get it. Paul did all of this missionary journeys. And Paul writes to the Philippians chapter 4, and he said, thank you for sending the money to him. He said, you know, God's always supplied what I needed. But then he says, I'm not asking for more money. I'm asking that God will give more fruit to the work that I'm doing, and it goes on your account. You want to make that application? You want to talk about our mission work? You want to talk about Robert Martin? You want to talk about all the good that this church has been able to do over all of these years? God didn't write that down in his ledger. This is what Robert has done. God wrote that down. This is what Palm Beach Lakes has done. So when you get to the last chapter, there's not much left. It's got 13 verses. Philistines fought against Israel. Men of Israel fled. The Philistines followed hard after Saul, and the Philistine killed Jonathan. Yep, that's David's friend. The battle was fierce against Saul. The archers hit him. He was severely wounded by the archers. David said to his armor bearer, draw your sword and thrust me, because I don't want it to be said that they did it. Thrust me through, and they'll come and say, we killed him. His armor bearers would not, for he was greatly afraid. David took a sword and fell on it. Saul took a sword and fell on it. He saw that Saul was dead. He also fell on his sword and died. The next day, the Philistines came to strip the the slain. Verse 8, they found Saul and his three sons on Mount Gilboa. They cut off his head, stripped off his armor, sent word throughout all the land to proclaim it in the temple of their idols and among their people. Then they put the armor in the temple of the Ashtaroth, who is the female counterpart to Baal, and they fastened his body to the wall. And all the valiant men of that city arose and traveled all night and took the body of Saul and the body of his sons, and that verse 11, and they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. End of 1 Samuel. What's happened? A king after God's own heart is about to come on the scene. He's not head and shoulders above the people. He's a Jewish shepherd boy. God selected the judges. Samuel tried to, and it didn't turn out good when he tried to make his own sons. And when the people asked for a king of a particular nature, he gave them exactly what they asked for. How'd that turn out? We've just looked at it, all these things on the board here. God is about to put on the throne a man after my own heart. And that's 2 Samuel. And that's where we're headed in a study that just lies right down the road. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Thank you very much.